Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to my show. Say what? When? Where? And most importantly, why? I have been asking why my whole life. Why did this happen? Why do people do the things they do? Why do I feel like this? Why? So like, why do you get that instant click with someone? Why do you suddenly feel like you've known them all your life and you just met? Why when you walk down a certain street you feel like you've been there before? Why? And on this show tonight, which is entitled Mr. Boogeyman, We're Not Afraid of You, because I'm going to be talking about death. But we're going to look at into death for what the truth is about it. And so first in my introduction here, I want to discuss a little bit about reincarnation. 32% of the people in the world today, or on the earth, I should say, on the earth, have a Christian belief system. Which does not support reincarnation. And I just wanted to tell you that in the Bible, and up until 300 A.D., after the death of Jesus, reincarnation was taught and was accepted. It was only in 300 A.D. that the Church Fathers decided to take it out of the doctrines, because if you thought you had more than one chance at something, you know, they didn't have as much power over you. You just had this one time, and it's heaven or hell, and you just better get your, you know, better come to us and let us tell you what to do and pay your money to us, and we'll take care of everything for you, and then when you die, you can go to heaven. Do you know, when I was a little girl, I used to hear that. See, I'm 78 years old. And I can remember back when I was 5 and 6 years old, and I was sitting on the pew at church, and the minister was telling me that Jesus was coming soon, and I thought, no, I don't want Jesus to come yet. I want to grow up and have my life. I have all kinds of things that I think about that I want to do. I can remember more so when I was 8 and 9 years old, because, see, I've been hearing that Jesus was coming too soon now for 75 years. And I said, no, I don't want him to come yet. I want to grow up and get married and have children and have my own home. And I thought, it sounded so boring to go to heaven. It just sounded boring. What am I going to do up there? Just sit on a cloud and strum my harp and get my wings and just sit around all day? I don't get that. You know, it just sounded utterly boring. I thought, I got places to go. I got things to do. I don't want to die and go to heaven. I want to live my life here and now. So I began asking all these questions. Well, why? Why? Why is there that instant click sometimes with a person? You're just so comfortable. Everything feels just eternal. It's an eternal feeling. It's like we have just always been like this. And I have a person in my life that I know we have been in many, many, many incarnations together. I think at one point we were even shared a womb together. I think we were identical twins. Then I think we were brother and sister. And I think we've been always been family. We've always been in some kind of family situation. And now this incarnation, we weren't in a family situation, but it also was not time yet for us to be together in any other way other than just friends. We're deep, deep, deep friends. We know we go way back together. We know we understand each other. And there's those levels of trust and intuition that you have with a person that you've been with over and over and over and over and over again. Okay, so Jesus was walking along the road one day with his disciples. And John the Baptist had been put in jail. And he was killed. He was beheaded. Well, John the Baptist, you know, had proclaimed Jesus as the Son of God. And the disciples just could not understand why Jesus didn't go and get him out of prison. He said, "Why? You know, Jesus, we just don't understand this. He went to prison and he was beheaded. Why did you let that happen?" And Jesus said, "All right, now, see, these were Jewish people. Jesus was Jewish, and all the disciples were Jewish. And for years, the Jewish people had been having their Passover. And when they had their dinner, they set a plate. And they leave the door open for Elijah to come. Because the Elijah was going to proclaim the Messiah. So they always set the plate and they left the door open. So Jesus told them, he said, "Now, listen to me carefully here. If you can receive it." I just love that sentence. You know, Jesus didn't stand up in the pulpit and point the finger and say, "You have to do this and you have to do that." And he just said, "If you can receive it." Isn't that gentle and loving and caring? He said, "I'm going to tell you something." And at that point in their experience, they believed he was the Son of God. And they believed that every word he spoke was pure truth. But he didn't pull that, you know, jam that down their throat. "Now you know I'm the Son of God and every word I speak is the truth and you have to listen to me and you have to do this." No, he was so gentle and loving and caring. He said, "If you can receive it." They said, "Who was John the Baptist? We thought he was part of us." And Jesus said, "If you can receive it, he was Elijah." In other words, the prophecies have been fulfilled because Elijah has now come. You've been setting the table for him all these years. Elijah has come. He's proclaimed that I am the Messiah and that I have come to bring the love of God to you and to redeem the people from the bloodshed warfare attitude that's been on this earth since the Lucifer Rebellion. Well, right there, that's reincarnation, folks. If John the Baptist was Elijah, then that means Elijah came back, took on a bodily form, was born as John the Baptist. You know, when John the Baptist's mother was pregnant and Jesus' mother Mary was pregnant, the two women came into the same room together someplace, and the babies jumped in their wombs in recognition of one another. when they came into the same room together, their babies jumped in their wombs. They were recognizing one another. And those, so John the Baptist was Elijah. And our show today is about the fact that death is a circle. Cycles and circles. Remember how we talked about the cycle is a circle. And it has no beginning and no ending. And when it gets to where it's supposed to end, it starts again. There's never any real ending. It just goes over again and over again and over again. And all of life repeats and repeats and repeats. And the cycles, I mean, you can just depend on it that spring is going to go into summer and summer is going to go into fall and fall is going to go into winter. And then that's not the end. Winter goes into spring. And the sun rises and the sun sets. And life is eternal. That is my show today. Mr. Boogeyman, we're not afraid of you. Life is eternal. Stay tuned for some wonderful stories.
You're kidding me. That's really the...
That's the name of the show today, Christy. I'm here with my friend Christy. We're having our Christmas time together, exchanging our presents and talking about wonderful times together. That we've been working together now for what, 9 years? Is it 9 years? About 9 years now?
No, it's going to be 12 years.
Oh, 12 years?
12 years.
Oh my God.
It's
this has gone so fast.
In 2001.
We did. I should tell how we met.
Yes.
I had this other girl working for me, and she would, you know, I do beach weddings and on the beach, and I have these little decorations, and I had this other girl that was helping me, and she was coming and setting up the decorations, and she just, it was back before you had to give, you know, written warnings and all this and that, but she had been screwing up. And I finally told her, I said, you know, I just am not going to be able to have, as long as you keep doing this, I'm not going to be able to have you working for me anymore. Oh, okay, I'll be good, I'll be good. And then the next time she came, she just was impossible. And I said, okay, that's it. I said, this is the last time you're working for me today. And here I had all these other weddings booked with no idea in the world how in the world I was going to do them. And that was on a one night, and the next morning, Christy, you call me.
I called you because I had just gone through a whole change.
You had just come from Kentucky.
Change.
Yeah.
I was going through a divorce. I was going through menopause. I had left my husband of 10 years.
Yeah.
I had brought my 14-year-old with me, and I was lost.
Well, but you were sounded pretty all together when you called me.
Because I keep it all together.
Yeah, she called up, and she said, hello, this is Elizabeth Christie.
Well, I found your card. It so happens that I go into Holiday Inn at the time, which is now called the Hills Hotel.
Right.
And I said, I'm looking for something to do, and I love to do the wedding planning.
But it was more the decoration.
Actually, I did decorations for my daughter's 15th birthday at that hotel. So I went in to see if they needed some kind of
help.
Designer, decorator, whatever, with events. And she said, well, we have a whole list of cards there. Just choose one, and as I went to go see the card, there's a card that just
jumped into your hands.
Just jumped in front of me and said, Marcy Ann. But this was a minister. I said, why would I want to call a minister? I want to do decorations. And so I called you the next day.
No, this is like from 6:30 at night
till like 9 o'clock in the morning, and you probably you're one of these up and early people. You were probably ready to call me at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm glad you didn't because I don't get up until a little later.
You've known me from all these years. I'm an early bird.
Yeah, and so she called.
But I called you the next day, and you said, "Oh my God!"
I couldn't believe it. It was like,
I just fired my girl.
Last night I said I didn't know how in the world I was going to do these weddings I had coming up. So we met, and you started working for me then.
And
so
here we are 12 years later.
Yeah, 12 years later, and we're planning a wonderful new package today that's never been done before in all of California. We're going to
be
the first.
It's
going
to be very successful.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful.
It's going to be wonderful.
But our show today now is about Mr. Boogeyman.
Okay.
And the title of the show is Mr. Boogeyman, We're Not Afraid of You. And you had told me that your dad didn't do anything for you while he was alive.
Correct.
But he did everything for you
after
his death. So tell us about that.
Absolutely. My dad was an atheist. He did not believe in the higher source, the God, the Jesus Christ, the boogeyman, so to speak.
The devil.
The devil. Nothing. He believed in nothing. Nothing. He said, when you die, you die, you're done.
That's the way the Jewish people believe.
Well, that probably he was a Jew. Well, he was a Spaniard, but he wasn't from Jewish.
He was from Spain, right?
He was from Spain.
Yeah.
Well, my father, for many, many years, I tried telling him about Jesus Christ, about the higher source. I called it the universe. I called it love. I called it everything. He said, let me see it.
Mm-hmm.
The day you see it and you let me see it, then I will believe.
I would say, look at me, Dad. Look at me.
It doesn't matter. He didn't want to acknowledge any of that. He had his beliefs. He was in a box.
Right.
Okay. So, long story short, my father, 4 years ago, passed away. As he was in his deathbed, I have 5 siblings. One of them, which is my twin brother, and 3 other girls, sisters. And they did not want to tell him he was dying, which I believe he was his right to know. Everybody has the right to live and the right to know they're dying. Okay, so he did not want to tell him he's dying. Well, me saying, oh my God, he's an atheist, he's dying. I have to tell him he's dying. He needs to go see the light. He needs to go towards life.
Yes.
He needs to understand that there is something else out there.
Beyond.
So this happened for about a week. I was at his bedside every single day for about a week. And every time mind you, they sent him home from the hospital with hospice.
Right.
Done. He's done. He's gone.
How old was he?
He was 84 years old.
Okay.
And every time he went into convulsions, my sisters will call the paramedics. Paramedics will come in, take him to the hospital, and as they would revive him. And one of the nurse supervisors from the hospital took us all in and said, I don't understand, I don't think you guys understand what hospice means. Your father is going. Hospice means he's going to his home to rest and make it
the transition.
Make the transition easy for
easy.
Him. And you need to let him
go
into that transition. Do not call 911, do not call an ambulance to bring him in, because we are a hospital. We make it better.
Well, they have
hospice, and they make his transition great.
Exactly.
And we're going to make it better for a little bit, but you cannot
stop the process.
Okay, so they send us home again. And when we were growing up, and my 33-year-old son today, at the time he was, 29? Ever since he was little, Jason, my dad, we would talk about, because my son would go, was in a Catholic school, in a military Catholic school. And he would sometimes, my father would sometimes pick him up from school, bring him to my house, whatever. And we would always, I had the opportunity to tell my dad about the Christ and the source and the higher power and whatnot. And since he was an atheist, like I said, he was always, let me see him and I'll believe you. Okay. And we had a pact since my son was little. Okay, my son was, 5 years old at the time, 6, 7, 8. Anyway, and we said, Dad, okay, when you die, we are going to set a table, because he used to bring him home from school and he used to wait and have dinner with us. And I said, Dad, when you die, we're still going to make a plate for you on the table. And if there is something out there, when you die, you're going to come back. We're going to set the dinner plate here. And you're going to come back and let us know there is something else. There is a higher source. And he said, fine. Well, Marcianne, 4 years ago, my dad was passing. And my son, Jason, 33 years old, Jesus Christ, by the way.
Right.
Okay. Went to his deathbed. We were sitting down with him. He didn't know he was passing. And I said, Dad, remember when Jason was little and we used to have a pact that you were going to die and I was going to put a plate on the table, a setting, and you were going to let me know if there was something else out there, if there was a higher source, not that you're going to die. Remember, they did not want to tell him he was dying. I said, Dad, not that you're going to die. I'm just saying if that would happen. And my father, I took advantage of that, saying that, because my son was there, so I figured, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my dad looked at me straight in the eyes with a deep, deep look, and he said, don't worry, you'll know that your father visited you. And the very next day, my dad passed. I went home that night.
Were you with him?
I was with him. But mind you, I was there for a week or two at his bedside. He was getting better, and I had to come over to Orange County. He lived up in L.A. County. And I came over to L.A. County, and I said, okay, he's getting better. He's not going to pass real soon, so I
drove. You could go take care of other things.
Other things mm-hmm. that night, and I was going to be back the next morning. Well, that night, my dad went into really bad convulsions, but my sisters didn't see that, so they didn't call. So the very next morning at 5 in the morning, I get a phone call from one of my sisters. I think Dad's going. I made it up there in a flash.
Mm-hmm.
When I got there, he held on.
Till you got there.
Till I got there.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I said, Daddy, what do you want? He goes, Marcianne, he took all the strength he had inside
left.
Him. And with a breath, he said, ambulance. And I said, Dad, there is no more ambulance. Look at the light. Go to the light, Dad. You're a good man. You've been a wonderful person for society. Look at the light and remember what you told me. And he looked, he turned his head, Marcianne.
He looked right at me, and his
eyes rolled back, and he took his last breath. Well, he passed. And it was going to be Thanksgiving in 3 days. I went home that day. I stayed with him. They more picked him up, whatever. I said, okay, girls, I'm going home. I'm going to unwind. I'll be back. I came home. I'll never forget. I got my laptop, walked into my room, got on my bed, turned on the TV, and I just turned on the channel. And I was working on my laptop. my niece, who was pregnant at the time, that didn't know she was pregnant, she was only 16 years old, was laying down. And the show was called The New Adventures of the Old Christine.
Yeah.
My mother's name is Christina. And my niece says, what are you watching? I said, I don't know. I just turned it on. Well, captions started happening on the TV. Like when you mute a channel and you have captions. Well, this was channel 2, English. The captions were in Spanish. And they said, Papa, Papa is here. My dad is here, in Spanish. And it said, and I took pictures of this, I know that my father visited me. Exactly what he said. I know, you'll know that your father visited you. I was just astonished. And he's talked to me.
Ever since.
Ever since.
Uh-huh. Because they're not dead. They're not really dead. They pass over into another dimension, another part of life. So he's still alive. I think we could just get that concept that death really is an illusion. Death has no real power. It's not it's not a permanent thing. It's just a transition into a different dimension.
Well, and do they come back?
Yes. You have any sense of him coming back?
Well, and I'll tell you why I asked that question, Marcy Ann. Because my niece at 16 years old did not know she was pregnant. She had a baby. She named it Robert Anthony.
Your dad's
my
name?
My father was Roberto Antonio. And that little boy, okay, my father owned a whole half a block of property.
Mm-hmm. In L.A.
In L.A. My sisters all sold it, and they lived there. They rent it from the lady they sold it to. Okay? And my niece goes out and has that baby, and that little boy wants to stay with grandma, which is my sister. My niece is my sister's daughter. And
in
he
the
said,
property.
In the property.
That was his.
That was
originally.
His. And he said, and she lived in one of the apartments, but my dad lived in the back house. Because there's like four apartments in the front, and the back house, and then a bachelor. And he walked
back into there.
Back into that place and says, Grandma, that's my house. I used to live there.
Oh, so he's back.
And he is, guess how old this little boy is? 3 years old.
Yeah.
Why would he say that?
Because while they're still young and they're still in their, before they've been corrupted, you know, they're still in their, they've just come from the realms of love and they're still in their innocence and see, they bring in the knowledge of the past. And it's just sort of
so do you think my father is? Because we believe that my father reincarnated in that little boy.
Yes, I do too.
And he does not want to leave that place.
Right. See, my mother is back.
Really?
Yes, my mother is back. And I'm going to tell that story in the next segment. Thank you so much, Chrissy, for sharing. I'm going to be having you on over and over and over. We're walking this same spiritual path together. And we're a great support system for one another, and so I'll be seeing you again soon.
Well, I'm very grateful that I've met you, and I tell
no
you what,
accident.
Marcy, absolutely, no accident.
We're looking
we were
forward
meant
to a
be.
Great 2013.
Absolutely,
okay.
I agree.
All right, thank you.
Well, I told you that I I believe my mother is back, and I want to tell you this wonderful story. When my mother was, my father had already passed, and mother wanted to stay in her own place. And so we decided that we would just get a caregiver to come in and live with her. And if she needed help, you know, getting her bath or fixing her meals and things, the caregiver would be there. Well, she lived in Bloomington, Indiana, where my sister lives, and so we ran an ad in the Indiana University newspaper looking for a student who would be willing to live with mother, you know, and get free room and board for taking, being there, sleeping there, you know, taking care of her while they went to school. And lo and behold, this young woman comes and answers our ad just right off the bat. She was older, and she was an RN, and she had been practicing her nursing, and she had decided she was single, and she had decided she wanted to go back and pursue a music career. She'd saved some money, and nurses make really good money, and she was going to pursue piano, and she wanted to perform and play and also be a music teacher. So she came and interviewed, and my sister interviewed her and took her to see the apartment and let her meet mother, and there just was an instant click. And so my sister got a piano and put it in the apartment, and the lady moved in, this young woman moved in, and she would play the piano for mother, and she was taking her, you know, classes and things. And there just was this wonderful love between the two of them. And she was there for 9 months. Mother lasted 9 months, and I had never seen my mother as happy as she was while this young woman was taking care of her. We all remarked about it, how happy mother was. Well, the time came for her to pass, and of course, this young woman being an RN, she immediately recognized you know, that she was beginning to pass. Passing is sometimes a process, like Christy talked about. There's a process to it. So she immediately called everybody. Well, I'm out here in California, and my two brothers lived, both of them lived 2 hours away, and my sister was in San Francisco. So mother had always told us that she wanted to have her children with her when it was time for her to pass. And she had also told us, she said, "Now, I don't want you to be sad. I don't want any carrying on and crying." She said, "I'll be ready to go. I'm ready to meet my maker. I'm ready. I want you to sing and clap your hands at my funeral, because I'm happy. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to finally get my reward." So she had already told us that. So the first person to get there was my youngest brother. And during the time that this young woman was waiting for one of us to arrive, and she kept telling mother, she said, "Well, I've called all your children, and one of them will be here soon." And you know how Christy said her dad waited until she got there? Well, mother waited until one of us got there. And the one to get there the quickest was our youngest brother. And he walked into the room, and this young woman taking care of mother said that while she was waiting for one of us to arrive, she was calling out the names of other people, and she was calling them in the sense that she was actually seeing them, and they were welcoming her. They were all people that had already passed. Her dad, she called out, "Oh, Dad!" And then Earl, that was her husband. And it's like there was a great throng of folks waiting, gathering and waiting for her to pass over, and they were waiting for her. And so the minute that my youngest brother walked into the room, he walked over to the bed, and he took her hand, and Mother looked up and looked Mac into the eyes, and she said, "Mac," and she left. She left. Well, we had the funeral, and this young woman that had been taking care of her for the last 9 months played the piano at the funeral. And I told my sister, I said, "Now, you remember what Mother said? She said we have to sing and clap our hands." And my sister says, "Well, you're going to be the one that leads the singing." She said, "I'm not going to do it." I said, "Yes." I said, "You have to help me. We'll stand up there together, and we'll lead them in the singing." And I said, this young woman that took care of her is going to play the piano. And so we stood up there, and I looked out over the room. You know, I saw all these long, sad faces. So I just said, "Well, I wanted to just share with you what Mother has told us our whole lives." She said, "I don't want you being sad. I don't want to see long faces at my funeral." She said, "I'm going to be happy. I was ready to go. I'm meeting my maker. And I want you to sing and clap your hands." Well, I wish you could have seen the looks on everybody's face. I looked out there. They all looked like, "You've got to be kidding, right?" I said, "No." I said, "We're going to sing and clap our hands." So we played a peppy song, and I've been trying to remember what that song was. I tried to call my sister, but they're all, maybe I can tell you later, but just think in terms of something like "When the Saints Go Marching In." You know, that's what they played at Walter Cronkite's memorial service that was on television. It was so wonderful, and they walked around the room singing and clapping their hands. And that's what we did. We sang and we clapped our hands at her memorial service. And it took the people a little while to sort of get into it. I kept nodding over to the young woman playing the piano. I kept, "Keep going, keep going." You know, and finally we got enough, we got rid of that spirit of gloom and doom, and joy began to come on the people's faces, and they all got into the happiness and the bliss of it. And you know, I kind of think the soul is there, the soul that's passed. I think it's still there. And I think Mother was singing and clapping her hands along with us. Well, after the funeral, of course, then this young woman that took care of her had to move. And we, you know, got rid of the things in the apartment and everything. And she just went into this unusual state of grief. And, you know, us four kids were just, I mean, yes, we've lost our mother, and there's a certain sadness to that, but she had lived a rich, full life. She showed us how to live. She showed us how to die. And she did it both those things very well. And so, you know, it's not a time to be sad. It is a time to celebrate their life. But this young woman just went into this deep grief. She dropped out of school. She went back home. And one day she called me. And she said, "I just can't get over this." She said, "I just keep feeling like I've lost my child. I've lost my child." She said, "Why would I feel like this?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And I said, would you want to come out here and stay with me for a while? And she said, yes. So she came out to California, and she moved in with me, and she got, being an RN, she was able to immediately get employment, and she worked at the hospital in Laguna Beach. They made her, I can't think of the name, like a ward nurse. She's in charge of the whole thing because she's so smart and so good at what she does. And she just stayed here, and she'd go to work and come home and just grieved and grieved and sobbed and sobbed and cried and cried. And I said, you know what, we need to find out what's going on here. And I said, let's you and me pray about this. And so I just took her in my arms, and I held her, and she just was sobbing, and I just said, Father, Lord Jesus, help me, show me what is going on here. Show me what is the source of this grief. Well, what I saw sort of in the spirit was that this young woman had been my mother's mother. And my mother's mother died when my mother was 9 months old of complications of childbirth. And my mother grew up without a mother. She was raised by her grandmother. And she, and this young woman had told me, I said, you're a beautiful young, beautiful woman. You're smart. I said, don't you think in terms of getting married and having a family? She said, no, I'm scared. I'm afraid. I'm afraid to have children. And so I saw where she was my mother's mother, and she had died of the complications of childbirth. And now in this incarnation, she was afraid to try to have a child. She's afraid it would happen again. And she was just pursuing her life as a single person. And the wonderful part of all of this is they were together for the first 9 months of mother's life. And then here she was back to be with mother for the last 9 months of mother's life. But then it triggered this traumatic event from her past life, and she felt like she had lost her child when mother died. So I said, I told her all of this, and she, down deep inside, she felt like it was the truth. And I could feel the tension and the grief and the sobbing begin to stop. And I felt her begin to relax and to settle into this truth. And then she began to come out of the grief. And I began to see her begin to become more in her power and to be happier and to begin to take charge of her life. And so as the time passed and the days passed, she says, I'm going to look for another caregiving job, because I live in a senior community here and there's lots and lots and lots of older people that want to have somebody come and stay with them, you know, sometimes just sleep with them at night. And she found this lovely Jewish lady that just wanted her to be there at night. She didn't want to be alone there at night. She said it'd be fine for her to continue working, and she just could help her do, you know, little meals, and they might watch TV together a little bit and just be sort of a companion. And so Danielle moved in with her. Well, during the time that she stayed with this lady, she was getting free room and board. And so she saved all the money she had that she made. And she stayed here another year and saved up all this money. Nurses make really good money. And then she told me, she said, you know, I've decided I'm going to go back to Indiana. She said, there's a gentleman back there that I know, and I would like to, now that I feel free and I feel like I could be able to get married now and have a family, because we laid hands on her womb and I prayed for her womb, that her womb would be healed and restored and fully capable of carrying a normal pregnancy and giving birth in a normal way. And she believed in that. She believed that was true. And she says, so I'm going to go back. She went back to Indiana. She bought a house, got a big job because of charge nurse, that's it. Because she had now a year and a half of charge nurse experience, they put her in charge of the whole thing there at the hospital in Indiana. She's making great money. And she decided to give this relationship with this man a chance, and they decided to get married. And pretty soon, you know, first comes love, first next comes marriage, then comes the baby carriage. And so in about a year and a half, she said, Marcy Ann, I'm pregnant. I said, oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And I said, there's no fear here. You remember, your womb is perfect now. Your womb is ready to carry, have a normal pregnancy, have a normal delivery, and have and be able to have this baby. So she went through the pregnancy. She worked pretty much all the way up to the end, was totally healthy, felt great, didn't have any complications, went ahead and had the baby. And then just about, I think it was like 2 weeks before she was due, I was sitting here at my desk in my office, and I said, and I just, you know, the spirit spoke to me and said, your mother's coming back. And I'm thinking, oh, she is. And it's, yes, you know, Danielle's baby is your mother coming back. So I called Danielle. I said, I didn't tell her, you know, that it was mother coming back, but I said, Danielle, I said, I want to come and see the baby. So I said, as soon as you had the baby, let me know, and then I'll make arrangements to come and see her, see the baby. And she didn't do any of that, you know, find out what it is in advance or anything. So she called me. She said, I've had the baby. It's a little girl. So I'm thinking, mother's back. And so she said, do you want to come and when do you want to come and visit? And I said, well, I'll come in about 2 or 3 weeks. Let me get it set up, and I'll let you know when I'm on my way. So she said, okay. Well, then I prayed again, and I said, Lord, I'd like to have confirmation that this is mother. So about 2 weeks later, Danielle called me. She said, Marcy Ann, the strangest thing has happened. I said, what? She said, do you know where your mother had that mole on her face? I said, yes. Mother had a big brown mole, not big, but I mean about a quarter inch across and maybe a 16th of an inch, you know, standing out on her face. She had a brown mole on her face. And they had looked into it when she was a child about taking it off, but they determined it had big, long roots, and she would be more disfigured if they took it off than if they just left it on. So they left it on. I said, yes. She says, do you know, she had named the little girl Maddie. She says, do you know that Maddie has had a brown spot come up on her face right where your mother had that mole? So I just said to myself down deep inside, thank you, Lord. That's my confirmation. I know now for sure, this is Mother. And I just said to Danielle, don't worry about that, Danielle. I said, it'll probably just fade in a few days. And it did. It was just to give me the confirmation. So I flew back across the country. I went to her house. I sat and I rocked the baby. And I said, welcome back, Mother. Well, I told my sister all of this. I said, well, Mother's back. And she's a very conservative Christian. And she, you know, just doesn't believe in reincarnation, although Jesus taught it in the Bible, but she doesn't believe in it. So I said, well, you just wait and see. So about 2 years later, I went back to Indiana, and my sister and I drove up to see Danielle. She had a new baby, new little girl. I said, well, let's go up and see the babies and say hello to Danielle. So I flew into Indianapolis. My sister picked me up, and we drove up. Daniel lives 2 hours north of Indianapolis, and we drove up to see her. And we decided the best thing to do would be to go to McDonald's because they have this big playland, and the kids could play, and we could talk. So we go to the McDonald's, and the kids play, and they have a wonderful time. We have lunch, and everything is fun, and we talk and talk and get caught up. And then Maddie began to get tired, and she came over, and she sat on Danielle's lap and curled up on her lap and started sucking her thumb with her one hand. And with her other hand, she started twirling her hair. And I thought my sister was going to pass out. She turned totally white. I thought she was going to fall off her chair. And I looked over at her and I said, see, I told you so. This is Mother. Mother twirled her hair all the time. She's sitting there reading a book, she's twirling her hair. She's sitting there watching TV, she was twirling her hair. It just was something she did. She twirled her hair. And there sat Maddie on Danielle's lap, sucking her thumb and twirling her hair. Well, I'm thrilled that Mother is back. I think she really wanted to be pretty this time. My mother was a very homely woman, and Danielle is gorgeous. And I'm thinking she was hoping that she'd look a lot like Danielle this time and be pretty, but she isn't. She looks just like Danielle's husband, and Danielle says that she's very studious, and she doesn't. She's not real social. You know, she would rather study and read her books and do her crossword puzzles. All of these things Mother loved. She loved to study. She did her crossword puzzles. She was bored with just casual conversation. She says, I'd rather read a good book. And so she's back. She's happy. She has a wonderful family situation. And this time, they're going to be able to live out their lives together and see and have it all be wonderful and normal and beautiful. Mother is back. Hi, this is Marcy Ann, and I'm at a very interesting place today. You'll probably hear a lot of noise in the background, but I think it's going to be worthwhile trying to do this. I'm at a holistic fair where there's lots of different types of practitioners in the alternative medicine scene, and actually I'm sitting right now with Deborah Hookey, and she has one of my favorite definitions here. I think it was, who said this?
Oh, I don't really know.
We're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And Debbie is a psychic. She can read your psychic energies, but she also can communicate with those who have already passed over. And that was what I wanted to talk with her about today. So, first of all, Debbie, how long have you been doing this?
Probably for over maybe 10 years now.
10 years. And when did you first find out that you could communicate with those that have already passed over?
Probably about 20 years ago.
And what was your experience, first experience with that?
It was pretty much when I was driving home one day in the car, and I came from a spiritual gathering where I received a message, and I received a message, and then I noticed that I was never by myself anymore. So when I was in the car, I felt everybody's energy in the car. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. I'm really not alone. You know, so that's how I discovered it. And from there on, I decided, I attended a church on a regular basis, and then I started taking classes, and I studied mediumship for 5 years. We studied twice a month, every Monday, and for 5 years straight. We never stopped, so...
And I understand now you do teach people yourself.
Right.
And where do you do that?
I do that at Multidimensional, and I'm actually teaching a certification here at Temple of Light in Irvine. So.
And just so I don't forget later on, I wanted to give you Debbie's website. It's Debra, D-E-B-R-A, Hookey, H-O-O-K-E-Y.com. And it's Debra@DebraHookey.com is her email, and her telephone number is 714-318-6629. First of all, Debbie, I wanted to tell you that in the experience of losing someone that you've loved, you know, or maybe you've been with for a long, long time, and you're sort of losing like part of yourself. Or if there's something that happens suddenly or some sort of a traumatic way that the person passes, you know, it leaves the ones that are still here in shock and in grief. And my daughter just recently went through this. Mm-hmm. She lost a person that she had been in a 7-year intimate relationship with, and he went suddenly without warning, and she was just in terrible shock. Mm-hmm. And Debbie has a we have a fire.
For my $1.99 prank.
Thank you.
No problem.
Oh my goodness.
You probably should put it right here.
It's pretty good.
So I took my daughter to see a psychic medium, and the person was actually able to bring in the man who had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, for me, it was just like that movie that Whoopi Goldberg made, you know. It was just, he was sitting there at the table with us. Do you think that's actually the way it is?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Their energy will be right next to you.
Yeah.
I mean, when I do readings, I actually usually bring in whoever the loved one is and have them come as close as possible so you are actually able to feel them, so you know that they're right next to you.
Yeah.
And then in a reading, when I do a reading, I make sure that it's very evidential that whoever I'm reading for, that I'm asking the spirit to give me evidence, something to validate that they know that's them. That's the most important part of it.
Well, something like that happened for my daughter, and maybe that is, and that is so good too, because it'd be something that the two people themselves, only those two people
that's
would
right.
know, and there wouldn't be any way for anybody else to have known it if it wasn't just them
that's
right
true.
There.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, he explained to her why he left.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a big question.
Oh, yeah. And,
he explained it.
And it gave her some closure.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It comforted her.
But that's what, well, especially mediumship, that's what mediumship is about. It's about healing. It's about healing others in many, many different ways. But especially if somebody's grieving, it comforts them. And you just know, you know now that life is, even though we're not here as a person, our soul never dies, that we're
right,
still
right
there, you know, and there's that love never dies, and that's really the most important part about it. And also from what we learn from those who have passed is never to have regrets. For us here, that we should never ever have regrets. We should take care of everything, because there's so many people that have gone to spirit that have so many regrets, you know. So
yeah. That's one thing I've dealt with in my life. I can actually say at this stage of my life that I have no, well, I have still one teeny tiny little regret about not going to my son's basketball games on certain Friday nights, that I went to prayer meeting instead, and I kind of wish that I'd seen every single game he'd ever played, but otherwise I've dealt with every other single regret that I've ever had, plus the fact that if you're open to it, you can ask Spirit, what was the bigger picture? What was the bigger thing going on there? And
right,
then the more understanding you have of something, and don't you think that that's something you also do and help people
oh,
with?
Definitely.
Let them see the bigger picture?
Definitely. Usually when I do a reading, I connect with the loved one, and I usually ask them, is there a message that you want to tell them? And a message could be about what has happened between them, or maybe a message is about how they can help them move forward in life, because sometimes they're stuck when they lose a loved one, you know.
Yeah.
So it's all about helping each other, and that's the whole point of it too.
Well, you know, the Bible says the truth will set you free.
Right.
And when you find out the truth about something, and you see what was really going on, and
right,
you're no longer in chaos, or you can settle things. Don't
right
you think? You
right
can settle it.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, and be healed,
exactly,
and then be able to go ahead. And this psychic that my daughter went to, because I didn't know you at the time, we just went online.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, and we looked at pictures of people's faces, and my daughter picked the
right
one that she
energy
felt like a
that's
connection
right
with.
Very cool.
And she told her that once they got all the information she needed, because my daughter says, well, ask him this and ask him that, and well, I want to know about this and that. And you know what? She got all her answers answered, all her questions answered.
That's
you know
great.
And then the medium said, and he said to tell you that he's sending you a soft furry pet, and that soon he's going to send another man into your life, and you will see then that he did right by you.
Oh.
Well, the furry pet showed up in 2 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
This darling little furry kitty, you know, and now we're 6 months down the road, the other man has showed up.
Oh, wow.
And she's just, my daughter's just doing great.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask here about Craig. Craig, you said that you took Debbie's class. So tell me what your experience was.
Well, basically, I always knew there was something different about me, but I could never really pinpoint it. I had a lot of premonitions when I slept, which at the time I thought were just bad dreams. But then I realized that as I grew older, I started being more observant to current affairs, things were happening in the news. I'm like, wow, I just had a dream about that the other night. And so since I started taking this class, it's helped me to not only acknowledge my gift, but acknowledge my mission. And
which you believe is now what?
Well, basically, in a nutshell, I'm supposed to help people with closure and just kind of straighten out, you know, people that are tormented. kind of do, you know, God's work the best that I can with my gift.
You know, that's a wonderful way to put it, because all of us have certain gifts and talents that we're supposed to share here on the earth. And when we begin to look inside of ourselves for our answers and to find our own personal power, then we're stronger, and then we can help others. And so what was your experience taking Debbie's class? You said she really is a tough teacher, huh?
She
pushes.
Yeah, she doesn't carry anybody or do the homework.
She makes you do it yourself.
Yeah. If I have a question and I call her at home and ask her about something, her only reply would be, well, what did I teach you? And
well,
I go back on the information that I learned in her class. And, I can pull it off and, you know, go on to the next step, if you will.
Okay, well, so I'm going to just tell our listeners that actually all of us have natural intuitive powers. They operate from the pineal gland. Is that what you believe? Yeah. And it's been sort of dwarfed because we've been through this dark period of on Earth down through the Middle Ages. We're just really now coming out of all the darkness and coming into the light, so we can, like, redevelop our pineal gland and get it into operation again. And so if any of you out there feel like, if you have dreams, or sometimes I have visions when I first wake up in the morning and I see things, and those are to help us. And also, Debbie, where is it that you give your classes?
I teach classes at Multidimensional. It's, if you look up S as in School of Multidimensional, it's smhas.com, and they are in Irvine, California. And I also teach classes. I am teaching a mediumship certification class at the Temple of Light in Irvine, California as well. So.
Okay. And I encourage anybody out there to do what Craig did and find out about these things. We're not supposed to live in the dark, you know, and wonder. Wonder, wonder, wonder. I wonder what it is. Well, go find out. Go and find. Well, Debbie, I want to thank you so much for taking time
thank
to talk
you.
With me today here at the fair. I know people are starting to come in now, and I know that whoever sits down here at your table with you and has them has a reading with you is going to be blessed today.
Thank you,
thank you so much. Thank you, Craig. Bye-bye. Hi, I'm here with my friend today, Ron Mead. Ron is a representative of the Trident Society, which is a company worldwide.
The coverage is worldwide, yes.
Yeah, the coverage is worldwide that provides cremation services. How long have you been doing this, Ron?
I've been doing it close to 8 years now.
8 years.
Yes.
And the company runs an ad, and they have like a coupon or something, a thing you can fill out and send in. And then you get names and addresses, and then you call and make an appointment and go out and talk to them about it, right?
Yes, folks. The company sends out a mailer that goes out, and anybody that expresses any kind of interest in getting further information from the company, they contact us. We get back with them, and we usually schedule just a, typically it's like a 20-30 minute consultation.
And free consultation.
Yes, free consultation. There's no charge for it. And just explain who the company is, what we do, the service we provide. And then at that point, they either make a decision to either, put a plan in place then. Sometimes people call back and they, need a few days or, where to, talk things over. And then get back with them.
Well, actually, that's what I had done. I either had received something through the mail, and I filled out a card and I mailed it in, and because I had been thinking about this for a while, and I decided that I did want to be cremated, and I wanted to have my my ashes spread in the Pacific Ocean. And I remember I told the kids I was thinking about this, and my daughter said, my oldest daughter, she said, well, Mom, you won't come back and haunt me if we just throw them out over the swimming pool, will you? And, of course, it'll depend on, wherever it is I pass. Because the way I understand it is, what I loved about your program is
since my children live all over the United States,
yes,
I could be anywhere.
Yep.
And I'm still traveling a lot.
Yeah.
So I could really be anywhere. And so tell me how it works when then, let's say I'm on a land tour and I'm in Rome, Italy.
Well, you know, what you bring up is exactly what I try to talk with my clients about. You know, I try to explain to them and share just how the world has changed over the last 100 years.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, people don't think about it typically, but one of the things I've really become aware of with my, you know, talking with people, you know, thousands now, and you know, talking with them about pre-planning and stuff like that, and the one thing that most people don't really take into consideration is none of us know where and none of us know when.
Right.
You know, typically. And we live in such a different world, and I just kind of share with them that, you know, 100 years ago, if you think about it, it's just amazing how this world has changed. You know, it used to be just horse and buggy. I mean, you figure 5,000 years or so, 5, 6,000 years of recorded history up until 100, you know, maybe 110 years ago, people got around in horse and buggies.
In this country.
In
yeah.
this country.
Yeah.
And all, and there, you know, and even across the world. And so what's happened is, with just like you're talking about, people, you know, I mean, I would imagine 110 years ago, if anybody knew somebody that went to Rome or went to England or
You had to go on a ship.
Yeah. That'd be just like...
And take months.
It's like the Carnegies or the Mellons or something that would have, mm-hmm. you know, been mm-hmm. going there.
So if I die in Rome, this Trident Society will pick up my body.
That's right. We'll take care of you. You get a card that just goes in your purse and your wallet. You leave one, like you said, with your children.
Yes.
You know? And if they get a
and
phone...
You use a local crematorium then in Rome, right?
Yeah, we have affiliate locations all around the globe.
All over the world.
Yeah, all over the world. And
then you send the ashes to
yeah,
the,
so if something
whoever
were to happen
designated.
In Rome, if something were to happen in Rome, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to check your identification. You know, they're going to go into your, you know, into your purse and your wallet, and they go, "Who is this?" You know, and it, you know, and
oh, here's a card. That
yeah, here's
Trident
a card,
Trident
and it
Trident
says right
Society.
On there. It's got an international number on the back. It's got an 800 number on the front, and what they do is they call that number. It says, "In the event of my death, please contact Trident Society at, you know, 1-800 dot dot dot." And
I'm in the computer, huh?
You're in the computer. And so all your information, all your contact information is available to us, so we know how to contact
the kids
or whoever mm-hmm. you have designated to be contacted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there isn't children involved, then maybe it might be a brother, sister, aunt, uncle,
wife,
whatever.
Husband.
You know, whoever you designate to for us to contact, those are the people we'll contact. And what we would do at that point is we would inform them of the whereabouts, that there's, you know, obviously something has happened, and but not to be concerned, because we're going to be sending somebody out there to take care of, do the pickup. You're immediately brought into our care, to our nearest licensed holding facility.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just a process of working with any, whether it be a county government or a foreign entity,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe it might be an embassy or somebody that we have to go through, but we
you do it
do
all
everything.
Yeah,
everything.
I remember when my uncle died, my aunt and uncle were down in Florida, and they lived in Indiana.
Yeah.
And he died while they were down in Florida, and then my aunt, I mean, first of all, you're in an emotional situation.
Right. Right.
And then she had to make arrangements to get his body brought back to Indiana on the train.
Yeah.
And it cost a fortune.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, to get him back.
Yeah.
And then I was talking with just a friend of mine this week who lost his wife. And he said that at the total expenses, he finally now has the total expenses for her funeral. It was over $20,000.
Yeah.
$20,000.
Yeah.
And when you came and talked with me and showed me the plan, I just was astounded at how inexpensive it was.
Mm-hmm.
I immediately grabbed my checkbook and wrote you a check, remember?
Yes. Yeah.
I said, I can't believe this. It's so reasonable.
Yeah.
And anybody, there are Trident representatives all over the world, right? And
are there are
Not Trident representatives, but there are our plan covers you
all over the world.
All over the world.
But you're here in the United States.
Yes.
So anybody listening to us here in the United States could set up their arrangements.
Yes.
Through Trident Society.
Yeah.
And if you're right here in California, you can call Ron. You can email me at my email, and I'll give you his phone number.
Okay.
So, well, you know, you say that when you meet with people, you get, there's a certain resistance to setting up arrangements
mm-hmm.
for your memorial services.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about that. And you know what I think that subliminally might be happening?
Mm-hmm.
Is that they think, oh boy, if I put this in place,
uh-huh.
then I'm going to die.
Uh-huh.
It's like they're not just setting up the arrangements for their memorial service. It's like they feel like maybe they're setting up their death.
Uh-huh.
But so if they could just think about it in times of being like an insurance policy,
mm-hmm.
it really is like an insurance policy, right?
Yeah, it you know, it really is. And I've noticed the same thing, too, when I'm talking with people. And I kind of feel like my job is, I've just realized over the years, it's almost like I'm more of a counselor.
Yeah, like a pastor or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it's like a pastor counselor.
Are you ready to go?
Yeah, than a salesperson, because I've just found it's people, because logically I can, you know, I can sit there and you can just put, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4,
yeah,
5, 6.
Yeah, it's really simple.
Yeah, it's, you know, logically it makes more sense than anything. None of us know where we're going to be. We don't know when. We don't know where. The prices just keep going up every year.
Yeah.
You know, for these types of services. And like you said, you know, if something happens and you happen to be away from home, it costs thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and
exactly.
thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most people aren't prepared, and they're all of a sudden, not only do they have the nightmare of the loss of a loved one, but they've got this whole other logistical nightmare,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
an financial nightmare that they have to, you know, to mm-hmm. encounter.
So they're not really setting up their death. Let's just think about it like you buy car insurance.
Exactly.
You don't expect to then get in your car and drive and have an accident. That I don't think anybody ever thinks that.
Yeah.
It's like, if I have an accident, I'm covered.
Yeah.
Okay. Or the health insurance. Nobody wants to be without health insurance,
mm-hmm.
but you don't go get your health insurance and then think that you're going to have to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, to get your insurance for your memorial services doesn't mean that you're actually setting up your time to die.
Exactly.
Because nobody has any idea when that is going to be. Like you said, the when, where, why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, just like you say, and it's like, you know, people, I talk with people all the time, that they've put a trust together.
Yes.
You know? And I said, well, when did you put your...
And a will.
When did you put your trust in your
health
will together?
Health directive.
Well, I did that, you know,
yeah.
It was 10, 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I go, well, congratulations.
Health directives, all these other things that
yeah.
we need to set up and put
yeah.
in place.
Yeah, and I go, congratulations. They go, why? And I said, well, I mean, you know, you're still here. You know?
And you didn't die.
You didn't die. But when it's true, there's three, like, kind of pegs on a stool. I look at it this way. You know, one is your living trust. The second one is your will. Because, you know, if you have your assets, you don't want them to go into probate, have your children
right,
spend
exactly.
the next 2, 3 years.
I have that all set
yeah.
up.
You don't want your kids, you know, having to go into court and go through all that, especially during a really difficult emotional time. And the second one is your will, because you know, if you have a favorite heirloom or something like
right.
that, you don't want the kids bickering over who's, you know, gets what. You know?
You know, my mother wrote that all out in her own handwriting, exactly who got what.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
You just, and we knew it was her handwriting.
Yes.
It was
yeah.
so smart.
Yeah, yeah. And, but there is people, I just see it, I'm not saying everybody, but there is a percentage of people out there that just when it comes to doing the final arrangements planning, there's a hesitation.
Uh-huh.
And they like, you know, and there's, I know, I think that somehow it's not, again, it's more emotional than logical. Because
mm-hmm.
logically,
that's right.
they can sit there and go, I don't want, they'll tell me, and they'll just line by line. I don't have, you know, I don't want my kids to be stuck with a big old bill.
Right.
When I'm gone. I don't want them bickering over how I wanted to have things taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I'm going to be. I know it'll maybe cost thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, that nobody has, you know, typically. And so logically they know that, but when it comes to kind of
actually signing
the sign in it, they think they're like signing their life away.
Uh-huh.
Like, okay, now it's time for the, you know, the Grim Reaper's just going to come knocking on my door,
know.
You know, anytime.
But you know what? President Nixon took extreme care to make sure that everything in his memorial library was going to reflect him and his presidency.
Yes.
The way he wanted it to be reflected.
Yes.
He took great pains. And when you visit his memorial, after you go through his memorial, you have a complete picture of what he wanted you to know. And President Clinton, you know, already in, down in Little Rock, Arkansas, he already has his memorial set up.
Wow.
And he's making sure that it's exactly what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I have mine set up. I'm just as important. We're all just as important.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
And I have mine set up exactly the way I want it to be.
Uh-huh.
And that's a right that we have to have it reflect. And I am encouraging people to do memorial services and not have funerals anymore. You know, the Jewish people have always never had an open casket. They've always had the casket back in the back, and it's closed. And the service is for the living, the ones that are still here, that go through the loss and then their lives go on.
Yeah.
And I have been doing memorial services the last 4 to 5 years, no more funerals, but beautiful memorial services out at the edge of the ocean, people and having people come and everybody gets to share.
Uh-huh.
It's a celebration of the life. And a cremation is perfect for that.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have to deal with any casket, and you don't ever see the dead body. Do you know, I never saw my mother's dead body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when my mother died, I was out here in California.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Indiana. And my sister called and said, do you want us to hold the body so until you get here?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be with the body? And because we were going to have closed casket. And I said, no. Whenever I think of my mother, I want to see her alive and
mm-hmm.
laughing and being fun. She was a fun person, you
mm-hmm.
know, and that's the way I see her in my mind. I don't have that other last look at a dead body. I mean, they're not there anyway.
That's right.
They've already gone, you know.
Yes, yes.
So I'm encouraging memorial services and not go through all that other expense and a tragedy. Let it be, you know, a grand celebration. And then I have a great peace knowing
mm-hmm.
that everything is all taken care of.
Yes.
And I know you say that you run in, and part of the other resistances you run in is they'll say, oh, well, we have to talk this over with our kids. Well, you know what? If I'd have tried to talk it over with my kids, I'd have gotten three different ideas,
exactly.
three different things to consider. I mean, why should I? It's not theirs. It's mine.
That's right. That's right.
It's mine. And my children love me,
mm-hmm.
and they want me to have what I want.
Right.
You know, so anything else you want to add in here? The one good thing about the price. Tell about that once you pay.
Well, with our company, the good thing is, and I think this is a big thing, and people don't realize this, is that typically, if you just go back historically, every 10 years, typically these kinds of services double in price. You know, if you just go back...
Keep going up, up,
up. Just keep going up, 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 up,
up. Your car insurance goes up. Your health insurance
exactly.
goes up. Everything goes up.
Everything
but
goes
with this...
Yeah. But when you put a plan in place with us, the price is locked in. The monies are put into a trust. You know, a portion of the monies are put into a trust. And what that does is it locks the price in. So whether it be next week, next month, next year, next decade, 30, 40, 50 years from now, you know, whatever, you know, the price, what everybody else is going to be paying, you know.
Who knows how much.
Who knows how much.
Seems like everything's gone up 10 times as much in the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But once you put a plan in place with us, it's locked in, it's guaranteed to be the same price today as it is, like I said.
You know, that's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's a fixed cost, so it's great. Yeah.
Okay, well, the added additional bonus I got in signing up with you and having my plan put in place is that we've also become friends.
Exactly.
That's been so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get together every now and then.
Yes.
And have a bite to eat or
yes.
go to a ball game and go swimming, uh-huh. Different things. And so that's been an additional bonus that I've really enjoyed since I put my plan in place. What was it, about 2 years ago I did that?
Yeah.
I think it's been about two
yeah.
or 3 years now.
Yeah.
So anyway, I want to thank you so much. I know you got to get going. You've got to get down to San Diego and sign up another lady
<That's right.
laughs> who's putting her plan in place.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to let you go now. And I just want to thank you so much for coming and sharing with us today.
My pleasure. It's been great.
So in closing tonight's show, I want to first of all encourage you to prepare for your own personal memorial celebration. Make it everything that you want it to be. And I encourage you not to have a funeral, but to be cremated and have a beautiful memorial service. My brother's memorial service was just wonderful. He was a teacher. And many of his students came and told how he had been so important in their life. And old friends from high school and college came and shared moments with us. And all of the family spoke. It was so comforting and it provided all of us with such wonderful memories. And you know, we even learned things about our brother that we didn't even know. It's better not to even see the dead body if you can work this out. I know many times when someone passes, we are with them. But then just have that body taken away and just remember your loved one full of life and happy and know that they're now in a different dimension, but they are not dead and you can still be in contact with them. And if you are in the 32% of the people on earth who do not believe in reincarnation because you've been taught that it's not true, just remember reincarnation answers so many questions. Believing in reincarnation will expand and enrich your life beyond all expectations. And so could you just begin to consider the possibility? Just know that Jesus taught his disciples that John the Baptist was Elijah reincarnated. And remember, even the DMV gives you 3 chances to pass your driver's test. Surely God would not limit our experience to just one life. We barely get started knowing all there is to know in just one lifetime. And what about somebody who's only here for a day or a year or a few years? Is that it? I don't think so. We go and we come. Life is eternal. Life is a circle. We live in circles, in cycles of time and space, and we learn and we grow and we can become all that we can be. So that old enemy, death, Mr. Boogeyman, we're not afraid of you. And until next week, Friday at 7 p.m., or any other time that you might be listening to my show from the archives, this is Marcy Cheeks saying aloha. Hello, goodbye, and I love you.